All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, April 22nd, 2017. A little overcast, 50 degrees out. Better get you golfing early because it's supposed to rain this afternoon. Pleased to be joined in studio by my man, Stevie G, who's back and better than ever. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Anthony. Great to be back. Great for another season of On Par with Anthony Scorcher.
Looking forward to another great year. Year seven.
Yeah. Wow.
Year seven for me.
So, unbelievable.
Pretty excited about that. Pretty excited about our guest. Hopefully he'll be joining us fairly soon. Hank Haney, renowned golf instructor.
Golfing royalty.
Golfing royalty. Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I would definitely put that. I mean, he's been around. Obviously, being Tiger's coach, having a front row seat to some of the greatest golf ever played.
That's just
doesn't get any better than that.
I mean, to be that intimate with, you know,
greatness.
Well,
you have a little bit of it working with me.
Of course.
Because Saturday morning,
I mean,
you're that close.
I can relate to the experience. Because yes, you know, being one of the all-time greats, certainly, and being this close to one of the all-time greats, I can certainly feel for what Hank
experienced. No, but I mean, you know, you think about the rare couples, right? You have Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah.
Like, how often do you get a chance to be that close? I mean, it's just, so to say that he's, you know, I think on that level, I think Hank Haney's probably golfing royalty in terms of, you know, great instructors, the fact that of his place in history of where he was, I definitely think so. I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Why don't we get to our first break? And this way, as much as I like talking to you, I'd rather talk to Hank. So let's take a short break. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcher.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. I'm Anthony, he is Steve, and on the line is renowned golf instructor Hank Haney. Hank, thank you for joining me this morning.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Really excited to have you on. A lot to talk to you about. I wanted to start with just take a look at the PGA Tour. If we took a snapshot at it, like maybe not 30,000 feet, but 10,000 feet, and we look at what's transpired over the last couple of weeks. Sergio, after a career of struggling to win a major, finally wins a major. We have Wesley Bryan, who essentially starts, you know, using trick shots to raise money to, you know, so basically a trick shot artist, wins a tour event at and then you have a Ryder Cup stalwart in Ian Poulter, who is going to be fine, but essentially does lose his PGA Tour card. How do you characterize? How do you describe what's gone on in the last couple of weeks on the PGA Tour? And what do you make of it?
Well, I think it shows just how competitive it is. There isn't a dominant player. I guess obviously Dustin Johnson is closest. We'll get to that right now. He's won three tournaments in a row. But not everybody plays every week. He's in with an injury right now from his fall at Augusta down the stairs. And as a result, I mean, it's just everybody has a chance to win on the PGA Tour. And even a player like Ian Poulter, who's been a very, very good player and very competitive, finds himself kind of on the outside looking in now, so to speak, because he didn't earn enough on his medical exemption this week, missing a shot at the Valero Texas Open. But, I mean, Sergio Garcia is a player that was certainly on the list or the top of the list of best players to have not won a major. Now he's done that. That was definitely a bit of a surprise at Augusta, considering the fact that his weakness has been putting and the greens are so difficult there. And, you know, you see a lot of first-time winners on the PGA Tour, just like you're seeing, first-time winner at the majors. We've seen that the last few majors as well. So I just think it speaks overall to the competition on the PGA Tour, and especially the competition worldwide, because there's so many very, very talented players. If somebody has the round of their week or the tournament of their life, they're gonna be a player that could win the tournament, and that's what we're seeing.
Do you think that there's the lesson to be learned from Sergio's, as a golf instructor who is instructed countless amateurs and pros alike? Is the lesson in Sergio's win at Augusta that it's a little bit of a microcosm for golf, that to really have success, you have to really let things go? I mean, this was a place that he had said he had openly said he disliked. He didn't like the way the course played. He didn't like the way they mowed the patterns. You always got mud balls. He was obviously openly critical of the place. And it's not until he says he openly accepts the fact that he may never win a major, and he sort of loses that expectation. Is that really the key to having success in golf, that you don't have that kind of expectation, that you accept whatever it is that you get, and that's just the end of it?
Well, I mean, I think that's a good point. There's no doubt about it. That's a lot to it in golf. I mean, people always ask me, how much mental is golf? Is it 90% mental? I hear that a lot. People say golf's 90% mental. Well, I think that's probably pretty correct. If the other 10% is 100% correct, yeah, golf's 90% mental. But you can twist the numbers around any way you want, and you can say that golf's 90% mental. You can say golf's 90% physical. I mean, but for a player like Sergio Garcia, who's traditionally been just a great ball striker and considered one of the best ball strikers in golf for many, many years, I think your point is certainly a valid one, that it's been more mental for him, and when he did let go, and without a doubt, the Masters tournament was, mentally speaking, it was by far Sergio Garcia's best major. And, he did let things go, and especially the what he perceived as, I think at the time, a bad break on 13 where the ball hit the tree and went down to the left. But he could also have viewed it as a good break, because his ball had been a couple yards more to the left. Two club lengths wouldn't have got him out of that trouble with a one-shot penalty. He had to go back to his tee, and then that would have cost him the tournament. So,
right.
You kind of look at it two different ways, and luckily for him, he started looking at things a little differently, and it certainly had a lot to do with him winning a green jacket.
Hank, this is Steve Goldman. It's a pleasure to talk to you. How much or how difficult is it to try to simulate the pressure that goes into making some of these shots? Because I'm always fascinated by watching these pros, especially, let's just say, somebody like Graham Dillette, who, let's just say, sometimes hits shots that, maybe an amateur would hit. And I'm always curious as to how much is it just physical, mechanical, there's a flaw versus, the swing just can't hold up under pressure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's flaws that cause the swing not to hold up under pressure. I mean, the golf ball doesn't know that you or I are nervous right now. I mean, all it knows is what the golf club is doing to it. Now, there's no doubt about it that when players get nervous, what tends to happen is their old mistakes come back. I mean, you don't see new mistakes. You see the same mistake that they've always made, but you generally will see it to a little bit higher degree. And I think that's how I view it. I mean, I don't view it like, hey, the guy's just joking. I view it like, that's his mistake, and here it comes again under these circumstances. It definitely is difficult to you know, simulate that, to emulate the pressure that you're under. I mean, we all try to do it. We do it even when we're just little kids. You know, I'm going to try to make this putt to win the Masters. I'm going to try to make this putt to win the U.S. Open. And all these young players that are playing today to try to make a putt or hit a shot on the practice range as if they were going to beat Tiger Woods. But, you know, it's never the same as it is when you're out there playing. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't mean you can't hit shots. Just because you're nervous doesn't mean you can't hit a good shot. You just have to do the right thing with the golf club. That's the way that I look at it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you, as a young boy, you dream of your first kiss, but it never goes exactly the way you think it's going to go. But just speaking of Graham Dillette, Steve brings up a good point, and he openly discussed his struggles with the yips. And I'm just wondering, is that maybe a more effective way of dealing with the yips? Most people try to pretend like they don't have them, and they continue to play on tour as best they can. But is maybe, do you think that opening up, you're about it, being, you know, public about, hey, I'm really struggling with this and I'm just going to try and work it through, and then he doesn't feel like he has to hide anything, do you think that maybe that's a better way or a more healthy way of dealing with the yips?
I don't know. I mean, it might be a more healthy way. I don't know if it's a better way. I don't know if there is a better way, honestly,
right,
Anthony, with dealing with the yips, especially when it comes to chipping. Now, I think with putting, you can find an alternative method. You see that. I mean, 6 of the top 10 finishes at the Masters this year used an alternative putting method. You can try different things, different grips, in particular with the putter, and have some great success if you're battling the yips with that. With dipping, it's a lot different. I mean, there's not an alternative method that people use that really works very well, other than the guy that plays the European Tour chipping one-handed. Of course, Vijay uses a cross-handed stroke when he's chipping, but none of it is as effective as you see with the putting. But yeah, I mean, when you realize you have an issue there, it certainly probably makes it a little bit easier to try to find a solution. The problem is nobody's found one yet for the chipping. That's the one that's really tough. You've just really got to try to, as much as anything, play around it.
Mm-hmm.
You see players doing that. I mean, hey, Martin Keimer won the U.S. Open at Pinehurst putting the ball around bumps. So, I mean, that's usually the best method with the chipping yips, which is you got to putt whenever you can. That's number one. Limit your chances to have a bad result. That's the number one option with the short game, yep, sure.
Ed Keimer was certainly lucky to be in the right place, you know, have that at the right time where his good run, because he was able to putt it around the course.
Yep.
Not a lot of people get that option. But we have, we're talking with renowned golf instructor Hank Haney. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Malvi's Equipment Company is the oldest distributor of power equipment on Long Island and has been serving the community for over 100 years. We have two locations for your convenience in Riverhead and Hicksville. Malvi's Equipment offers a diversified line of quality products for golf, sports, and turf, including Jacobson, Redexim Vertidrain, Smithco, and Turfco. We also carry Mahindra and New Holland tractors and construction equipment. Visit our website at malvisequipment.com or call us at 516-681-7600.
Right. Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He is Steve. And on the line is world-renowned golf instructor Hank Haney. Hank, I wanted to, something that I've been, I really was excited to talk to you about, because it's something that's sort of, I've wondered for a long time, and that is when certain, you know, when you get people on TV or whatever talking about the golf swing, particularly maybe somebody who's not particularly a golf instructor, one of the things I've noticed and when they're critiquing other golfers, and it sends like all the people that I follow who are actually golf instructors into like a tizzy. And just wondering, what is it that really offends golf instructors when people are talking about the golf swing? How frustrating is it as a golf instructor when people who aren't golf instructors but maybe know enough to be dangerous about the golf swing talk about it?
Well, sometimes it's comical. I mean, you know, people have their opinions on, you know, how you should swing a golf club or what people do wrong or what people do right. I mean, you know, everybody has their own theories. I mean, you know, teaching golf is a little bit more difficult, I think, than you know, people necessarily realize or sometimes give it credit for. But you have to realize that to be a golf instructor, all you have to do is find somebody to listen to you.
Right.
It's not like there's any big training that goes with it. There's no certification that you absolutely have to, you know, achieve. There are, you know, ways to get certified. And obviously, people get trained where they work with you know, competent instructors to get that training. But having said that, I mean, you don't have to show a certificate before you give a lesson. So anybody can have an opinion. Anybody can have an idea. There's a lot of different ways to swing a golf club, and a lot of different ways to go about fixing different mistakes. But when I hear people talk, you know, a lot of times they just go around the problem. And tend to make it a little bit more complicated than I think it has to be. And I always try to make things as simple as I can. It's just my style of teaching. It's a little bit more geared, I think, towards the average player. Because I often wonder, I mean, when some people are talking about the golf swing and talking about really just playing the game of golf, I wonder how many people listening really have any idea what they're talking about. Because sometimes my head is spinning when I listen to some of these golf instructors, and it tends to be that you know, people who necessarily don't know a lot, they try to sound like they do just to make themselves you know, appear to be more knowledgeable. But I think oftentimes the more knowledgeable person is the one who can just keep it simpler and find that one or two things that somebody can think about that could actually make them better.
Well, Hank, I think Anthony and I can relate to that because we're both teachers. Anthony, social studies teacher. I'm a math teacher. And I kind of think about it, you know, teaching a subject to various levels of expertise. You know, we have honor students, we have remedial students, you have everybody in between. So I'm always curious, from a golf instructor standpoint, the difference between working with, let's say, an amateur golfer versus a pro golfer. I mean, obviously there are different issues to deal with, but when you try to help someone improve their game, is there some similarity that you can draw to regardless of who it is that you're teaching, or do you try to cater to the individual?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I mean, to me, though, they're all just golfers. I mean, I don't look at it like they're good students or they're bad students. They're just golfers. Everybody's different. You can only swing the club so many ways. You can only hit the golf ball so many ways. I mean, you either hit it too high or too low, or you curve it to the right or you curve it to the left. I mean, there's not that many different mistakes that you can have. And like I say, you know, you're either fixing a slice or you're fixing a hook. So from that regard, yeah, the severity of the mistake might be different, and there might be certainly an inconsistency with amateur golfers or you know, players that struggle with the game compared to professionals. But they're still really the same kind of mistake. So when it comes to fixing mistakes, you approach it, at least I do, that the same way. It doesn't matter, you know, who the player is. Now, you know, better players offer different challenges. Maybe they're a little bit, you know, easier to work with in terms of their physical ability is maybe more gifted. But having said that, there's, you know, sometimes there's more mental challenges with those players. I mean, I know, I remember when I first started teaching golf, I mean, you work with beginners, you work with higher handicap players, and then you know, you think to yourself, geez, let me have somebody with some talent. And then you work with all these touring pros like I did for 31 years, and this, you get done with that, and you're like, let me have those amateurs. but I just kind of look at everybody. They're just a student. At the end of the day, they're all just students. They're not good ones. They're not bad ones. They're not tough ones. They're not easy ones. They're all just students.
One of the things that you probably, you know, that you've been witness to is this sort of uptick on the playing lesson. And that, have you seen, do you get a lot more requests for the playing lesson versus the range lesson? And do you find it to be helpful or just another way to do things as opposed to just sitting on the range?
Well, I mean, you know, my career has changed. I mean, my last golf lesson was Tiger Woods at the 2010 Masters. So,
right.
You know, I talk golf now. I mean, that's what I do, and I do clinics. I do a lot of clinics, and I probably teach more now than I ever have. I mean, I have 150,000 people on Twitter that I talk to every day, and I've got a couple million people that we send emails to about golf instruction. But I think the course management aspect of the game of golf is really the most untaught. Part, and it's one area where people could really, really improve. The problem is with playing lessons. When people take playing lessons, is there's only so many things you're going to learn in that playing lesson, because there's only so many situations that you run into on the golf course. And invariably, what happens is playing lessons turn into golf swing teaching lessons on the golf course, and that's not really the best place to be doing that. If you truly are taking a playing lesson, then you're just really concentrating on playing the game, which people could really improve a lot by doing that. There's just, basic things that amateur golfers just don't get when they're playing, like simply, teeing off on the proper side of the tee. I mean, I always tell people, tee off on the side of the trouble or the side of your most likely miss, because it allows you to angle away from the trouble. I mean, just things like that can make a big difference in players' games. So I like the concept and the thought of taking playing lessons. I like talking about course management, but most people are more focused on fixing their ball flight, which is never a bad thing either.
Yeah, you kind of led me right to my last question, and that was, what are you up to these days since you're not teaching? Is it just clinics? Are you you have anything else in the that you got cooking up?
Well, I do my show every morning on SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, so we talk to a lot of people there. I do a lot of clinics for different companies that I represent, and then I do my instructional video series with my Hankin University, and that takes up most of my time. So, I did clinics last year, like you said, for over 15,000 people. I reach a lot of different people now, and my career is, it's kind of gone full circle. It's gone from teaching the amateurs to teaching professionals to now back to talking to more amateurs and a lot more of them. And I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's been great. Golf's been great to me. I feel like I've been so incredibly blessed in my life and my career to have done all the things that I've been able to do in golf. And I mean, I love talking about golf, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show this morning.
Yeah, and we appreciate you having you. That we're just about out of time, so I just wanted to say we were extremely excited to have you on. We were thankful that you were able to make it happen. Thank you for getting up a little early for us. I know you're not in the exact same time zone, but your efforts are appreciated. And what time is the show on? It's on weekdays, right? Is it 10 o'clock?
Yeah, it's 10 a.m. Eastern Time on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio.
Right.
And KNY Golf Radio.
There you go. So, again, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate the effort.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, Hank, you too.
Take care. All right, that was Hank Haney, world-renowned golf instructor. We'll have we'll take a short break, and we'll back to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag, designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game. PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He is Steve. I mean, does it get any better? I mean, it's just, it's good stuff. Great discussion, digestible little bits of pieces on different topics. He was great.
Yeah, Hank, obviously has a lot of opinions about the golf swing, even though he's not, as he says, he's not actively teaching and instructing. But, to have somebody like Hank Haney just talk about the game of golf and talk about, the golf swing and the fact that he made me feel better telling me that, that I'm no different than any other golfer out there, that we all make the same mistakes. It's just to what degree and the severity of the mistake.
And the skill level you're dealing with at the start.
Of course.
But no, you're right. I mean, a miss right is a miss right.
I mean,
no
matter, look,
if I'm missing, we're both lefties, right? You've played enough to me, enough with me that my big miss off the tee is way left now. Is that any different than Phil's shot from Wingfoot? You know what I mean? It's a big miss left.
Right, exactly.
It's a big miss.
Right. And like he said, there's only a couple of problems that can happen. The ball goes left, the ball goes right, it goes too high or too low, and then you have to try to figure out how to fix it. But I'm always, you and I, we're always fascinated by these guys. These guys are better at what they do than I would be at anything that I could ever dream of.
Sure.
But still to see, the struggles that they go through, to watch Graham Dillette, he can't hit the ball, 30 yards without getting himself into trouble.
Right.
And thinking, well, how can this possibly happen? I mean, the man is an expert at what he does.
Yeah.
And yet he still has problems hitting the golf ball.
Yep. Yeah, and he has like a mental problem with a certain shot, with specific. But I think it goes back to the point that you brought up about the pressure, and I think putting people under pressure is a fascinating thing because it does, first of all, it takes a unique constitution to deal with it.
Right.
Right. And over time that can, that can wear and show cracks, some people never, for most never, really.
I don't care what you do. I mean, you're right. When we're all kids, we're sitting on the putting green or wherever it is, this is going to win the match. There's no way to simulate that type of a condition without actually being there and actually going through it until you realize, oh, gee, maybe my swing doesn't really hold up or under these situations, or maybe we need to work on my conditioning or things.
You can sit in front of your home club, you can sit on the fairway from 220 yards out with the carryover water to a shallow green, like 15 at Augusta. And you can hit a bucket of balls all day long. But you put 50,000 people along that hole.
That's right.
Scream, silent, waiting on every move with another billion people watching on TV.
When you're actually playing for money.
When you're playing for, you're playing for, forget money, you're playing for history.
Right.
You're playing for history. That's way bigger deal. I mean, the money comes and goes, but history, good luck.
Right.
Good luck.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, fascinating question. That's it for this week's show. Thank you for Steve for joining me. He should be here fairly regularly when he can. Another
sure
fantastic.
The listeners will be thrilled to hear that.
I'm thrilled. I don't care about the listeners. All right. That's it, folks. Enjoy your week. Make sure you see your local PGA professional and enjoy the golf. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.